Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
And welcome to episode 176 of Geek Town Radio. My co-host this week is Daryl. How are you doing?
Hey there, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. So, what have you been up to since you were last on?
It's been a while. So, the quickest thing was yesterday I was at the Sunday Film Club, which is a community event at St. Luke's Community Centre in London.
Cool.
Where every month the people there arrange a film viewing with snacks, and then afterwards we have a discussion about the film.
Oh, cool.
And the film this time was Last Action Hero.
Oh, cool. What a great movie.
It is a great movie. See, most people didn't like it, but I was like, this is a lot better than I remember.
Yeah.
Seeing as I watched it like 20 years ago.
Yeah. It gets a lot of stick, that film, but I actually rather like it. I think it was a really interesting idea.
Yeah, I think it was pretty spot on. And you can watch it and go, in terms of like the special effects and the demolition stuff, I mean, that's as good as anything you see today.
Yeah, totally.
I mean obviously, there's no aliens, but yeah, it's just good old blow some cars up, stupid, unrealistic driving through, you know, built-up areas and stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, back in those days, there were probably mainly practical effects, I would have thought, quite a lot of the time as well.
Blowing up a lot of buildings.
Yeah, totally. No, it's... I might have to go and dig that movie out again.
I would recommend it. It's great. It's, as I say, because I mostly remember the back half of the film.
Yeah.
But the front half is very, very strong.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the back half is a little weaker.
Right, okay.
There was a few of us there, and, you know, had some snacks, had some talk about it, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and they
good.
Do that once a month. And you can search them out on Facebook for St. Luke's Community Centre, Sunday Film Club, and you can learn more about it there.
Awesome. That's worth going to look up if you're in the area, definitely.
So that was, that was yesterday. But since the last time, as you recommended to me, I took the plunge and watched one episode of American Vandal.
Right, yes.
The first season. And then I watched the whole thing that night. It's amazing. I wasn't sure about it, but once I took the plunge, it surprised me. Like, very few sort of like well-known actors or actresses. I think probably the biggest name was Saxon Paige Charbino,
right,
who's been on quite a few things, who was the guy's boast. And I'll say no more about that.
Yeah.
The person involved in the guy's boast. Yeah, and I just liked it because you watch it and you really get into the sort of drama, and it came up to remind yourself this is real. This isn't a real story. It's a mockumentary. But then they'll just drop in one of those really dumb little puns or jokes, and you'll sort of realize what they said like 30 seconds later. Say, what did they just? Yes, they did. They just make it. Yeah. Yeah. So, and then I think probably 2 days later, I watched all of the second season.
Yes, because the second season came out fairly recently, actually, didn't it?
Yeah, it came out. So it's probably out for like a week when I saw it. And I would say it's easily as good as the first season. It could be better and might be even better.
Awesome. I'm glad you're enjoying it. Hopefully we'll get another season after that. I don't think it's been renewed yet or cancelled, so we don't know. But hopefully there'll be another season.
I hope so. Yeah, just it was pretty amazing. Obviously, since last time, Iron Fist has been released in full.
Yes. What are your thoughts?
I felt the first half was very slow.
Yes.
And didn't do much to change from, I think, the expressed issues of the majority about it.
Right.
In that, because I think people said it's too much joy and it's too much Meacham.
Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of joy and a whole lot of Meacham in the first season.
That
but
is very true.
I think it was episode 5, which might be the best episode of TV I've watched this year.
Right.
And then it dropped through the floor again in terms of quality.
Yeah.
So overall, I liked it. I think there are definite improvements. I think the story was definitely told better. The plot worked a lot better, but the pacing was still really, really slow. Obviously, the fight choreography is gone. It's amazing now. It's so much better, so much more engaging. But yeah, it's still, yeah, I still like the plotting and the characterization and stuff. To me, I don't really get the two of them in terms of chemistry. And not necessarily chemistry, but in terms of compatibility. I mean, anyone could look at that and go, no, Danny's not someone that you could form a relationship with and cohabit with.
Right, yeah, yeah.
With his tendencies to take independent action. How many times does he defy her lie to her in the first, like, four episodes?
Yeah.
Don't do that. Okay, yeah, I definitely won't do that. Does it?
Yeah.
Please don't do this anymore. Okay, I definitely won't do that. Does it? And it's just like, oh.
I mean, I don't know where they're going to go with this yet. I thought it left the whole thing in an interesting place. Oh, yeah,
the ending was bonkers.
Yeah.
Absolutely bonkers.
I thought it left it in a really interesting place. We don't know whether Iron Fist is going to come back for another season yet. That's up in the air. We don't know whether they're getting another Defenders season.
Has anything been confirmed for season 3 yet on Netflix?
No, I don't think so. They're still, because we know they've not decided on another season of The Defenders. They've not confirmed another season of Iron Fist. We know we've got Punisher coming, Daredevil's coming next very soon. I mean, I don't know. We don't know exactly what's going to happen with season 3 stuff, but it would be a shame if they left it there. I sort of would like to see a third season of it just to see where it goes. But at some point, I think it would make sense to team him up with Luke Cage and do a show with Iron Fist and Luke Cage as they were in the comic books, the Heroes for Hire stuff. That would sort of make sense to me, but they sort of need to resolve where both those shows ended at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I have to say that in terms of that, Sacha Dhawan had like all the best lines.
Yes.
I think it was just an amazing performance. Because I listened to like reviews and stuff where people sort of questioned his character. I was like, no, I get it. I totally get where he's coming from.
Yeah.
And I think it makes even more sense when you see inherent issues with Danny as a person.
Yes.
And why that would just drive him to that level of mania.
Yeah.
I would say his performance is probably the best. His character is probably the best. It's probably the most well written throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. They write villains fairly well on those shows, generally.
Yeah.
Like I mean, Kingpin. Fisk was by far the best thing of the first season of Daredevil, and he is returning for the new season, as we've seen in any of the trailers that have been out. So, you know, they wrote Fisk very well. I mean, Punisher arguably was probably one of the best things out of that run, although technically not a villain, he's an anti-hero. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they seem to write those roles much better than they do some of the heroes.
Definitely agree. But I think that's a problem with superheroes, the genre in general, is that you see them, they will almost constantly repeat their mistakes again and again.
Yeah.
And that's great. That just about works on a Netflix that you'll see a show once every 18 months. But if you're watching something like The Flash or The Arrow, that drives you nuts. You're watching it the same thing happens every single year.
Yeah. They are getting to the stage with the CW shows that they are starting to hopefully change things up a little bit. Now, you know, I mean, you've got Arrow in prison when he comes back, and I suppose that's a spoiler, but I know people get upset because we got told off for telling off too many spoilers. But if you've seen any of the trailers for the latest season, we won't say any more than that. But yes, that's where he starts off.
Well, no, to be fair, the finale does have that information.
Yes, so.
So it's, but yeah, other than that, moving away from superheroes and moving to something very different, we have Burden of Truth, which is a drama that comes from CBC in Canada. You can find it in the UK on Universal TV. And it stars Christian Crook and Peter Mooney.
Yes.
And it's the story of a big city lawyer who comes back to hometown and through events decides to represent a group of high school girls who have become sick with a mystery illness.
Yes.
And it's a simple thing. It's also, I think in America, it's on the CW, which given that it's fronted by Christian Crook, who...
Makes sense. Yes.
You know, Beauty and the Beast, huge international hit for some reason. Yeah. And I've watched four episodes of it, and it's really good. It's a good drama. It's got a wide range of characters, lots of character development, and you are interested in why the kids are sick.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's got some, but not much in terms of legal stuff.
Yes, it's not overly heavy on it. It's good.
Yeah, we'll probably get into it more at the second half of the season. But yeah, I would definitely recommend if you like dramas, if you like Christian Crook, go watch it.
Yeah, I'm probably about as far in as you are, actually. I'm probably 4 or 5 episodes in because I'm running a bit behind on that. Yeah. I think it may have finished by now on Universal. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a good, interesting sort of take on those sort of legal dramas, interesting character developments, like you say. It's a nice little show worth going to check out, I think.
Yeah, there's not, is it maybe 12 episodes?
Something like that. Yeah.
So it's not going to take it long to binge through. You don't have to binge it. You can just watch it, as a regular appointment or in between other shows as a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
And yeah, so the last thing I have to talk about is The Babysitter.
Right.
On Netflix, which I know, I guess, probably a little over a year ago, I saw a trailer for this and got massively hyped. And I totally forgot about it because I saw the trailer and it was like, 3 months later was the release date. And it stars Judah Lewis and Samara Weaving.
Right.
And it's directed by McGee. And if you know that name from Charlie's Angels.
Yes.
You know, the sort of the style of film you're about to watch. It's a comedy horror. It also features a lot of big names. It's got Robbie Amell, obviously, for the formerly of Firestorm, Hannah Maley from Pitch Perfect, Bella Thorne, Emmy Alien Lind, and King Buck, a well-known YouTuber and comedian.
Right, okay.
And basically, at first it seems pretty cookie cutter. Really, really nerdy kid who must be about 12, has, I would say a crush, but definitely has a love of his babysitter.
Right,
who sort of seems like an older sister he never had. And he has a couple of very strange parents. And they go out, obviously babysitter comes over, and she's been a babysitter for quite some time. And then in the evening, his best friend, potential love interest, had challenged him to stay up, see what they get up to, suggesting that perhaps the babysitter was going to do some crazy stuff. So he does, and what he sees forms the rest of the film. And given that it's a horror, you could probably guess part of it.
Right, yes.
So yeah, it was a heck of a lot of fun. It's got a very quirky way of storytelling, which you'll start to see. I think you start to see it from the first scene, I think. But yeah, I would definitely recommend it. It's a lot of fun. The actors have a lot of fun in it, especially Robbie Amell. It's just interesting. It's the second time, or maybe even more, that Robbie Amell and Bella Ford have worked together, because they worked together on The Duff.
Right, yes.
Which is a great film.
Right.
Which I would highly recommend. And yeah, I had a lot of fun watching it. And yeah. I'm glad I remembered it.
Yeah, I might have to go and check that out. I don't do horror very much, but horror comedies are usually quite good fun. And you've got to be in the right frame of mind for a McGee movie sometimes, but if they are usually stupidly good fun.
Yeah, those, I don't watch. I tend to stay away from horror films, but I don't mind things like this. It's certainly not The Conjuring or The Exorcist.
Yes,
it's just a fun film. It's definitely more teen comedy than a horror film.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of the fact that I don't usually look at horror, one thing I have seen this week, The Haunting of Hill House, which is actually released on the 12th of October on Netflix, but I'm talking to one of the cast later on this week.
Is that the older boy?
Oliver Jackson Cohen, who plays one of the older brothers in the family. I'm talking to him later this week. It probably won't go up on the podcast because they're insisting on doing it over a conference line. So the quality will be horrific probably. So it will go up as a post on the website. But this is a supernatural TV series. I've seen the first episode of it so far. Oliver Jackson Cohen actually isn't in that first episode very much. He is a little bit, but he's got like one relatively short scene. The show is from Mike Flanagan. It revolves around this family who lived in this place called Hill House, which appears to be haunted. Basically, the parents of the family had bought the house to flip it, to do it up and flip it. And when they're there, you sort of get shown bits of flashback of them, the children in the house with their parents, and you get to see sort of little bits of what happens, and then you follow them as they're sort of grown up. And one of the four children has become somewhat of a skeptic to this paranormal phenomena, and he is investigating various paranormal phenomena and writes horror novels, one of them being The Haunting of Hill House, one of them being the actual book, because they TV show is based off the book. So they've sort of used that, and he actually wrote a book about sort of things that happened in the house when he was a kid. And it transpires, although, you know, he writes all these various horror stories, he's never actually encountered supernatural stuff himself. So he's sort of a little bit of a skeptic, but uses them as a jumping off point to write these horror novels, much to the annoyance of the rest of his family, because the rest of his family have seen things. And, you know, he's using bits of their life in the book, and they're not very happy about it. So it's quite sort of interesting just following this family. It's not like out and out horror. There's a few nice little scares in there. It's more kind of creepy. It's not like sort of gore and blood and guts or anything like that. Certainly not from what I've seen so far. And although I don't really do horror TV series, I did really enjoy that first episode. And I will go and try and watch some more before I do this interview later. So I think that's going to be one worth watching out for. As I say, I've only seen the one episode so far. So it could be something worth looking out for, though. 12th of October to Netflix, called The Haunting of Hill House, that one.
Mm-hmm.
Staying on Netflix, other things I've watched. The Good Place came back with a phenomenal first episode. I don't want to say anything about this show other than watch it. I don't want to give anything away, because whatever I tell you will give away things that happened previously, and
I don't want to do that.
But I will say it is probably the best sitcom on TV right now. I think it's hilarious.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely brilliantly written. If you've not caught The Good Place yet, the first two seasons are fully on Netflix. The third season has just started and will go on weekly from this week. Just go and watch it. It's absolutely brilliant. Over on Sky One, The Last Ship came back, and they put out the first two episodes of that. I mean, I like this show. It's fun and silly. And yeah,
I think I watched the first two seasons.
Yeah, it did start to get to the point of how many large world-changing events can you throw at one group of people in a boat. But the last season, because we're on season 5 now, the last season kind of takes a slightly different tack, in that it's not anything to do with germ warfare or that sort of thing. The whole thing's based around a cyber attack, which sort of takes down areas of the US just as it's starting to rebuild. That's sort of the basis for the 5th season. Oh, okay. And it will be the final season as well, and I think that's probably the right thing, because I 5 seasons is a respectable number, and I'm not entirely sure how much more you could get away with at this point. But I've enjoyed the first 4 seasons of it. It's good fun escapist action TV show, so I'm quite glad to have that back. And South Park started again with its 22nd season, and I've dipped in and out of South Park, and I missed a bunch of seasons in between. But the opening episode for this season is called Dead Kids. And I mean, it's just pure classic South Park, taking the most inappropriate topic and skewering it in a wonderful, thought-provoking way. And it's dealing with school shootings in the US, and deals it in such a way of, there are shootings that happen on a sort of daily basis at the kids' school, and they're all so numb to it at this point that they're sort of ignoring it. So, you know, the mother is the only one that's actually got any kind of panic about her. And yeah, there's the shooting goes off at the school, and they're at the dinner table, and she's going, "Kyle, tell them what happened at school today." And it's like, "Oh, well, I didn't do very well on a math test." And, you know, it's like, "But what about the school shooting?" Oh yeah, the school got shut up again. And the dad's sort of going, "Okay, right, fine. What's this about you failing a math test?" You know, there's just no connection between the sort of fact that the school's got shut up, because they're all so numb to it. It's just brilliantly done. Absolutely wonderful bit of satire. South Park at its best. And I can't believe they're still going so well after 22 seasons and still managing to do this and do it in a kind of vicious, thought-provoking way. It's just brilliant. And the other thing that landed this week was the trailer for Dark Phoenix, which, have you seen this?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I did, actually. Usually, I observe a strict no trader policy, but I think because of probably one of the biggest storylines in X-Men comics, I had to.
Yeah.
And then I wish I hadn't.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
I think the main, well, I'll tell you the thing is that because obviously when you get trailers, you generally get like, we get press things and it has, here's a link to a trailer, here's a link to a poster. And then at the bottom, here's a synopsis so you can put that in your story. If you read the synopsis and then look at the trailer, two different films. Because the synopsis is pretty much a synopsis of what happens in the comics.
Yeah.
And the trailer isn't. It's just... It just seems like the beginning. It seems like the first time they did it in the earlier X-Men, which wasn't great.
Yeah.
Because the problem with Dark Phoenix is that Dark Phoenix is all about space aliens, armadas, destruction of planets.
Yeah.
And it happens to have the X-Men.
Yeah.
So obviously that doesn't work in a cinematic.
No.
Because, when you've had absolutely no allusion to any of those things beforehand.
I think
the first line of it is, after the X-Men perform a space rescue. What? How do they don't even have a place to live. How do they how are they in space?
I think that's been the problem with the rebooted sort of younger X-Men, is it's been very, very disjointed in places. You know, the timeline seems to slip all over the place. And
it's an issue, because another reason why the Dark Phoenix is one of the biggest comics storylines is that Jean Grey is a founding member of the X-Men, huge backstory.
Yeah.
But in this, she's literally been an X-Man for a day.
Right, yeah.
She has no input. You don't know who she is.
Yeah.
She's just a girl who turns up in the last room and does a little something.
Yeah.
Whereas if you think like in the comics, a founding member of the X-Men would be Mystique, arguably.
Yeah.
Beast.
Yeah.
And I forget what else got blown up, didn't they? And that's the thing. It looked at it and went, ooh, it feels like the Civil War effect, which is let's use a really big name and sucker people in and then tell a story that has nothing to do with it.
Yes, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with X-Men moving forward from this. Because I mentioned in the article that this is probably the last incarnation of the current X-Men going out. And somebody posted, oh, well, it's not the last one. There's still New Mutants. Well, yes, I know there's still New Mutants, but that's like a very different beast.
Yeah, that's got no connect.
Regarding Fox's X-Men, I rather...
It's probably the end of what we call the first class universe.
Yeah, because it would make more sense for Disney because there is the Disney-Fox merger going through. Assuming this goes through without a hitch, which it looks like it's probably going to, I suspect that Disney will recast everybody and start again. Because one of the people that you're going to want to be able to put in is Wolverine. And Hugh Jackman's Wolverine is so attached to that Fox franchise. Much as I would love to have him in the MCU, he's quit doing it now, so that's not going to happen. So I think if you're going to do that, you sort of need to start again. And I think, you know, James McAvoy has been quite good as Professor X. I like Michael Fassbender as Magneto, you know, and I like the older X-Men as well. But I sort of think that you probably need to start again. If and when they merge them into the MCU, I think you're going to end up resetting everything.
Definitely.
So that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news. TV and film news this week. We start off with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. One cancellation which may have slipped you by, Dara O'Brien's Go 8-Bit has been cancelled after 3 seasons, which is a real shame because that was quite a fun gaming show. And we don't have that many pure entertainment gaming shows on TV at the moment. So
do we have any?
If any. So I think that's a bit of a shame that they've decided not to bring that back, because it was a fun little format and it showcased various different games. And I thought they did a really nice job with it, so I'm kind of sad that's going.
That is true.
They've also cancelled I'm Dying Up Here, which was a Showtime series which ran on Sky Atlantic in the UK about the beginnings of the stand-up scene in the 70s in the US, and the second season recently finished on Sky Atlantic, and I loved that show. I thought it was really well put together, but it just didn't have the numbers, unfortunately, so it's not coming back, which I think is a real shame. Over on E4, they have picked up the Charmed reboot. No idea what this is going to be like, but I think E4 is probably the right place for it.
Yeah, I think it fits in with it. And it's going to be pretty young skewing now.
Yeah, so... I think that's probably the right place for it. And they've also picked up the sitcom called Happy Together, which stars Damon Wayans Jr., not the one that's in Lethal Weapon. It's the son,
yes,
I think.
His son, yeah.
So it's him, and it's exec produced by Harry Styles, apparently, that it's about a pop star
really?
That moves in okay. with her family. It's not got Harry Styles in it, he's just exec producing it. So
yeah.
They've also renewed The Good Fight for a multi-series deal on More4. So that will be around on More4 for the next few seasons. Making a Murderer Part 2 has finally got an air date on Netflix. That's coming Friday the 19th of October. I really enjoyed the first season of that. I thought it was a really interesting series. So I'd be intrigued to catch up. I know some bits of things that have happened in between because it's been in the news. But I'll be interested to see how they cover it for the second season of that, or part two, as they're calling it, because it is sort of a continuation of the same story.
Definitely.
And they've also announced the UK return date for all the main DC shows on Sky. So starts off with The Flash on Thursday, the 18th of October, Supergirl on Monday, the 22nd, Arrow on the 23rd on Tuesday, and Legends will begin slightly later on the 31st of October on the Wednesday. I think they're all pretty much staying the same sort of days.
What about Black Lightning?
Black Lightning is back on the 16th, I think. So, I mean, technically Black Lightning's first, but it's not part of that same universe. So, but yes, that's back on Netflix as well. Sticking with the Arrowverse, though, they've given a bit more information about the crossover event. The crossover event will be called Elseworlds, which is interesting because we're all assuming that it was going to be something like Gotham, or although I guess that would get very confusing with a Gotham TV show, but they're calling it Elseworlds. And they've also announced they've cast LaMonica Garrett, who you may know from Designated Survivors. Yeah. So they've cast him as the Monitor as well, which is an interesting addition for those of you that know the comic books. I mean, Elseworlds is an intriguing title to pick because the Elseworld brand generally is known for doing things which are not only sort of set in the multiverse, but set in kind of very obscure, different multiverses. So they're things like Superman Red Sun, when you know Superman lands in the USSR rather than the US.
Yeah, the period Batman thing.
Yeah, so we've Gotham by Gaslight, which is a period Batman thing, chasing Jack the Ripper. So they tend to be those sort of things where they are very much not attached to the main canon, although they've then folded some of those back in into the multiverses. So there is a multiverse where the Gotham by Gaslight world exists. There is a multiverse where Superman landed in Russia. So, I mean, it sort of fits in with the TV universe because we've established multiverses because Supergirl's in one and Black Lightning's seemingly in another. I do wonder if they're using this as a way of setting up the Titans Doom Patrol multiverse, whether Batwoman is going to be in that universe or whether she's going to be in a thing of her own where there was no Batman and it's Batwoman instead. Maybe they're going down that route.
See, I had a heated discussion with a friend of mine who was insistent that Batwoman would be on Earth-1, and I was like, well, no, that doesn't make any sense. So it would seem to make more sense to see that she would be in, say, Earth-4 or somewhere like that. And it would be interesting to see whether or not she's the first of the Batman moniker, or if there was or is a Batman in her one. Which obviously we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, so I mean, we don't know at the moment, you know. I mean, we have seen multiverses, so whether this is going to be attached to a multiverse we've already seen, whether it's going to be set to one of the Earths we've already seen, or whether it's going to be entirely separate, we don't know at the moment. Or whether it's going to be something that's messed around with the timeline, because the introduction of a Monitor, Marniveau, which is the character LaMonica Garrett playing, that's sort of one of the name Monitors. There are, in the comic books, there was sort of one Monitor, and then there were a whole bunch of them, and then I think they were less of them, and then there were more of them, and then there were one of them, and they're like a race that monitors the multiverse, and there's sort of more or less of them depending how many multiverses there are, or how many kind of universes there are in the multiverse. So it's an interesting character to put in, but they generally just watch. They don't get involved. Usually the only time you see them is during a large crisis event, so having one appear is not usually a good thing for people. So I don't know. I mean, that's kind of going to be quite interesting, I think, to see how they're going to use him and what they're going to do with it. I mean, as we know, we've got Batwoman showing up, which is Ruby Rose. We've got Tyler Hoechlin, who is back as Superman, Clark Kent. We also know that Lois Lane is going to be in this, played by Elizabeth Tulloch, who is from Grimm. Yeah. Cassandra Jean Amell has got a role in this, playing as Nora Freeze, who is
yeah, traditionally the wife of Dr. Freeze.
Traditionally the wife of Dr. Freeze. Although, again, maybe if they're looking to place Batwoman as the...
as a primary, it might be... Freeze might be that character.
Yeah, might be Nora. So...
I think that'd be an interesting take.
Yeah, where they've sort of gender switched most of the roles. I mean, maybe the Lois Lane we're going to see is actually a Superman rather than Superman. Although, maybe they gender switch those as well.
For what I've seen from the press stuff, it does tend to suggest that Lois Lane is one that's in Earth S.
Right,
and they're
okay.
So they're speculating about where they are in their relationship, whether they're still reluctant partners or if they're, you know, dating or something.
Yeah.
So obviously there's no reference made in Supergirl over whether or not Clark is like in a relationship. So I assume that she's from that universe, not another one.
Yeah. The other thing we've got, of course, was spoilers if you haven't seen the end of Supergirl's last season, but the very final scene of Supergirl's last season was a version of Supergirl showing up in Russia, which is basically the Red Sun storyline. So whether that ties into it as well, maybe, we don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Oh, I get very concerned about time travel shenanigans.
So we don't know exactly what's happening, whether it's a messing around with the timeline, whether it's something to do with it would seemingly be something to do with the multiverse, but we don't know how they're going to get into it. I think adding a monitor in there is an interesting pick. I don't know. I'm quite interested for this. Should be over in December, we hope. Should air over here. It's airing December in the US. I suspect it will air in December over here as well. Moving on to Netflix, they've gone heavy into the sci-fi. They've commissioned three new sci-fi series on top of the ones that they've already commissioned, things like The Order, Lock and Key, V-Wars, Another Life. They've now added three new ones, which one's called The Island, which is I-Land, October Faction and Warrior Nun are the three series they've picked up. So October Faction comes from Damian Kindler, who worked on, I think he was the creator of Sanctuary. He's worked on Krypton and Sleepy Hollow. Based on the IDW comic book written by Steve Niles, follows a globe-trotting monster hunters, Fred and Dolores Allen, who after the death of Fred's father, return to their hometown in upstate New York with their teenage children. As the family addressed, Fred and Dolores must hide their identities as a member of a secret organization, and our heroes quickly discover that their new small-town setting isn't idyllic as it seems. So, seemingly a comic book about a couple of monster hunters.
A family of monster hunters.
Or a family of monster hunters, yeah. I mean, whether the kids are involved as well, I don't know, but the parents certainly are. You imagine the kids are going to get involved in some way. Difficult to say from the description, because we've had a few things which are sort of people move small town and there are monsters. Because, I mean, Grimm arguably was that sort of idea. Sanctuary was about monster hunters as well, so maybe Damian Kindler is probably the right person to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the comic book at all.
No, I don't know.
But we'll see. 10-episode series they've ordered of that. We'll see when that comes. Island comes from Van Helsing writer Neil LaBute. It follows 10 people who wake up on a treacherous island with no memory of who they are or how they got there. They set off on a trek to find their way back home. They soon discover the world is not as it seems. Faced with the island's extreme psychological and physical challenges, they must rise to better themselves or die as their worst ones. It's sounding very Lost to me, that.
No, I look at that and think more of a whole lot of horror films.
Yeah.
Horror mystery films that involve people waking up with no memory of things.
Yeah.
It's a pretty common trope. So,
That does have a cast, and I mean, the cast sound reasonably good. It's Kate Bosworth, who was in Long Road Home, Still Alice, Natalie Martez, who was in The Crossing and Under the Dome, and Alex Pettifer, who was Magic Mike, I'm Number Four. He was in Stormbreaker when he was a kid as well. So those are the three stars.
I'm a big fan of Martinez.
Right, yeah.
I wish her stuff wouldn't get cancelled.
Yes, well, there is that. You know, Crossing was good and Under the Dome was a good series. Yeah. It's just a real shame. So we'll see with that, but hopefully it will hang around. Neil LaBlute's going to be showrunner, director and writer of, it's only seven episodes, that series. Mm. Jonathan Scarfe, who also Tom Van Helsing, he's joining on the directing side to help out. Lucy Titler, who was on Mr. Robot, is also joining with writing. So, yeah, I mean, interesting bunch of people. Van Helsing seems to have a reasonable following, so who knows?
I watch it. It's okay. It's okay.
It's not exactly a ringing endorsement.
No, I definitely wouldn't put it down to ringing endorsement. I say it's okay. A horror. It's just a simple Canadian horror.
Right.
I just think the writing could be better.
Right, yes. We'll see what happens with that. Warrior Nun is the third one. This comes from Ghost Wars and Continuum creator Simon Barry. Ghost Wars, I think, went out on Netflix over here and cancelled after one season. Continuum, we stuck around for a while. I think that went out.
Continuum, I think it's like maybe, four or five seasons. I think both of those shows are excellent.
Ghost Wars I didn't watch, but I did really like Continuum. I thought that was really good. Yeah. It's inspired by the Warrior Nun manga novels. The story revolves around a 19-year-old woman who wakes up in a morgue with a new lease on life and a divine artifact embedded on her back. She discovers she is now part of an ancient order that has been tasked with fighting demons on earth, and powerful forces representing both heaven and hell want to find and control her. Yeah, I mean, an interesting enough setup, I guess. It's not exactly that original, but it doesn't mention anything in the description about her being a nun, but I'm assuming she is.
It's hard for it to be original when it's an adaptation of something.
Very true. So, I mean, you know, Barry's going to be the writer, showrunner, and exec producer on the 10-episode series. Amy Berg, who has worked on things like Counterpart and Da Vinci's Demons and Person of Interest, is a consulting producer on the series. That's the other name which I thought was quite interesting in their lineup, because she's worked on some really interesting shows. So I'm quietly kind of confident for that, because he's done a reasonable job in the other stuff that he's worked on. I'd like Simon Barry's work, so we'll see what happens with that. No release date for any of those shows yet, but we'll let you know when we hear more. They have all been properly commissioned. They're not sort of like pilots and stuff. They've all got series orders, so they are going to be coming like the next year or the year after. You'll probably see those. And the last news story we've got, Zoe Kravitz is to star in a High Fidelity series, which is coming to Disney's as yet unnamed streaming service. This is sort of based on the original novel by Nick Hornby, which followed Rob, who was a London record store owner, and along with his employees, Dick and Barry, obsess over music, pop culture, and top five lists of things. You'll probably be familiar with the film as well, which starred John Cusack and Jack Black. I loved the film. I think that was a brilliant adaptation of the book. The book's great as well. TV series, obviously, they've announced Zoe Kravitz, who is not a guy, so she is taking the lead in it, so they're gender switching the lead round. Comes from Bull and Ugly Better writers and producers Veronica West and Sarah Kuzerka. It's an interesting group of people behind it. I think gender switching the lead is perfectly okay. I think that's an interesting thing to do. Interestingly, Zoe's mum was in the movie version as well, because her mum is Lisa Bonet and her dad's Lenny Kravitz. So Lisa played one of the roles, played Marie DeSalle in the film version. Zoe Kravitz has been in Mad Max Fury Road. She's been in Divergent. She's recently been starring in Big Little Lies. So I think this is an interesting wider adaptation, you know, because a lot of the stuff that we know is coming to the Disney service is things like, you know, it's genre things like Star Wars, or, you know, we know we've got a live action Star Wars TV series. There's the Clone Wars revival coming, High School Musical. They're talking about potentially doing live action Loki and Scarlet Witch series. We've got a Monsters, Inc. animated series. So this doesn't really necessarily fit directly into any of those molds. So it's a different kind of straight adult drama, I guess. I'm assuming they're not aiming it at a younger audience. I'm assuming it's going to stick as being a sort of adult drama, which I think is an interesting take.
Yeah, I think it seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
I obviously hope for the best.
Yeah, I hope they do a decent job with it, because I think it's quite a beloved thing that both the film and the book were very kind of well respected. So hopefully they don't kind of mess with it too much. But I mean, the whole thing with the book and the film of his girlfriend leaves and he goes to reevaluate his life by going through mm-hmm. his top five worst breakups. I can see the top five thing sort of extending out over a series quite well. You know,
I definitely
can see that working well as a sort of series with sort of one episode dedicated to a particular thing. So I can see how they're thinking with it. I can see why it might work as a series. So one to look out for. We don't know anything about what's happening internationally with the Disney streaming service, other than they're saying it's launching late 2019 in the US, then's going to be rolled out worldwide. They have said they are rolling it out worldwide, but I mean, if it's late 2019 and then everywhere else afterwards, it could be 2020 before it's released over here. I just hope that when they do it, they do it when the live action Star Wars series comes out, otherwise that's going to get pirated to death by people. So that's all the news we have for this week. Next up, we have the interview.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The interview this week is with the composer of two diametrically opposite TV shows. One is Man in the High Castle and the other is DuckTales. So the man's name's Dominic Lewis. We've interviewed Dominic before. He's a really lovely guy. He's a British-born composer, works in LA. His work includes things like Spooks the Greater Good, the film version of Spooks. He's worked on the Peter Rabbit movie recently. The most recent things he's been working on, Man in the High Castle, which premieres 5th of October. So that's coming back very soon. He's also working, as I said, on DuckTales, the revival of DuckTales he was involved with, and Goosebumps 2 Haunted Halloween, which is a new movie which is coming out on in the US. It comes out on October 12th. I'm not sure when it's out over here yet. So there's a lot of stuff we've talked about. We mainly talk a bit about Man in the High Castle, about DuckTales, about his work on Peter Rabbit, because that was kind of interesting, and the work on Goosebumps as well. But he's a really nice guy. He was lovely to talk to. So here's the interview with Dominic Lewis. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate.
Good, good. It's slightly over 12 months, I think, since we last spoke, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I can't remember whether you were working on DuckTales last time we spoke to you. I think maybe you just got it, but you couldn't talk about it, so we didn't talk about it.
I think
it
so. I think yeah. You're right. Yeah, that's good memory. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's right. Yeah.
Should we start off with DuckTales? Because
sure. Yeah, yeah.
That's like the thing that has been out on it over here. So what was your reaction getting the call to get that then?
It was kind of crazy. I'd been in contact with Jay and Mark over at Disney TV out here for a while. Had a meeting with them like, I want to say 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. And just nothing really that schedule-wise was linking, you know, that I could make happen. And because I was still sort of doing additional music with other people and I didn't really have my own setup really. So it would have been too hard to take on a show. But anyway, Jay, bless him, kept asking my agents, you know, would he be interested in this? Would he be interested in that? And then DuckTales came up, and being such a massive DuckTales fan, I was like, I have to do that. I have to do that one. And that's turned out to be one of the most successful things I've done. It's really been amazing. I mean, the show, that people love the show, because it's so difficult with a reboot to get it right. And Frank and Matt have got it so right, and people love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's got an amazing voice cast on it. The animation's great, obviously. In terms of the music, where did you kind of start with that? Were you taking any inspiration off the original stuff, or was it just completely clean slate?
It was a clean slate. I mean, I sort of have subconsciously Ron's music in the back of my head because it was so great. It is so great. But I didn't want to revisit it. I made a conscious decision not to go and revisit it because I didn't want to as a team, we wanted to create the best version of DuckTales you think you remember. And I think it was important not to go down that nostalgic route and try and conjure up any correlation between the scores. Now, just now and again, you know, we use the main theme. The moon theme comes into play at the end of season one. So, you know, there's little hints of it. But I made a conscious decision not to revisit the original scores and to see exactly what Ron was doing, because I wanted to bring what I bring to something. So it was important for me not to do that. But I first got involved actually with, you know, I have got producer credit on the main title, the new main title. Because I got, when I said yes to doing the show, they brought me in for my thoughts on the main title. And it was funny, actually, because they'd done this, well, as you can hear, it's sort of, you know, a new, young, fresh take on it. But the bridge, when they originally did the bridge, and Smitty's great, the main producer who did it, did the bridge. They, you know, they modernized the bridge and they changed the chords. And I am like, I still have the original in my iTunes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of my favorite themes of all time.
It is one of the best TV themes ever made.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm listening to it, and this is cool. And then the bridge came, and I'm like, whoa, you changed the chords? You can't change the chords. You got to have it. You put the chords back. So I sort of became involved in that. And before I even touched the score, I was doing stuff on the main title. I wrote, you know, I made sure that Jerry Hayes' original horn lines were put in there on strings, and kind of gave it a chugging kind of action string feel underneath all the cool new pop elements. And actually, I met Mark Mueller later on and told him the story, and he was like, thank you so much for keeping my course. So I got involved with that first, and then obviously the, you know, episodes started coming in and I started on the score. So
yeah, what a thing to land on, because it is, and particularly being able to get involved with the main theme as well, although you're not writing the melody for it. I mean, it's such a classic thing to be able
it's
to
scary,
get your hands on.
But it's scary though. Yeah. You know, you don't want to piss people off, because because it's like sacred material. But I think Smitty did a really good job of keeping elements of the original, but freshening it up a little bit and making it more accessible for kids. Because I mean, as great as the original is, I mean, it is very 80s.
Yes.
So
yeah,
I mean, kids are listening to be like, what is this? So he did a great job.
Yeah, totally. And then, of course, you've got this sort of mental leap between something like DuckTales to something like Man in the High Castle. I mean, is there any crossover? Are you working at the same time on those two?
Yeah. It's very strange, but it's also great because it keeps me sane, because, you know, you'll be dealing with Nazis for the morning. I'll have a morning with Nazis, and then I'll have an afternoon with joyous little ducks running around having adventures. So
just to point out, the morning with Nazis is referring to Man in the High Castle and not DuckTales.
I don't have Nazi meetings in my studio. No. Definitely Man in the High Castle related. So yeah, it's I was talking to Daniel Schweiger of Film Music Magazine yesterday, and asked me, he said, do you ever get like depressed or bogged down when working on a High Castle? And I said, actually, yeah, I do. But luckily, I have DuckTales. I just, you know, swoop on into DuckTales and I feel a lot better about it. It can get really strange writing High Castle too, because I try and give everything and emotionally put myself into whatever I'm writing in order to create the best product. So it does get me down sometimes. But as I say, I mean, with things like DuckTales and Goosebumps and kid stuff, I've tried to do more since I've had children. I've tried to do more children things for kids that I can, you know, they can watch. And it keeps me a bit more sane when you do the really dark stuff.
yeah, of course. So High Castle's back for its third season very, very soon, actually. 5th of October, that's back.
That's
so, in fact, by the time this goes out, it may actually be already on. So what changes have you made for the third season of that from the music side of things?
It is a little different, actually, because, well, I'll take you through the evolution of the score through the season. So do you remember season one was very character-based, very intimate, smaller instruments, a smaller palette in order to really get to know the characters.
Yeah.
I'm being very general. And then into season two, you've got, you know, the prospect of the end of the world. So things got a lot bigger. It got a bit more Straussian, a bit more Wagnerian. And then season three just sort of twists a little bit. And there's more emphasis on time travel and what that means. And so it kind of gets a little dreamier and a little smaller again. But they obviously have, it's sort of a hybrid of the first two. But I've wanted to lean a bit into the sort of Hitchcockian mix with K. Dick, obviously. Mm. And it's like a dreamy time travel with grit and creepiness and weird. So I do kind of draw on that influence from, you know, Bernard Herrmann and Alex North and all those guys doing those sort of noir scores. So there is an element of that, which I've really enjoyed doing. You know, I'm very lucky on Highcastle to be able to push the envelope a little bit. I mean, not in regards to a big scheme of things, but in terms of TV music, I've been very lucky to sort of experiment and with harmony and melody and really draw on my classical upbringing and teaching and bring that out in Highcastle, which is, I think, why it's been so successful, because it's a little bit different. Mm. And why people, you know, of the things I've done, the one thing people mention is, oh, I love your score for Highcastle. And I think that's because I'm able to really experiment freely, and I'm not sort of, I haven't got chains on, it needs to sound cool and fresh and da 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 da. And I'm just allowed to, you know, I have a clean slate, if you will, and I just kind of get on with it and use all my experiences and my love of music, and just, it just all comes out. So season three's definitely been that, with sort of experimenting with harmony and how far can I push it. And thankfully I've pushed it a kind of a long way, and the picture just holds it because it's so great. And it is that weird mix, because essentially Highcastle is that mash of a lot of genres. Mm. You've got your period and your sci-fi and your action and you know, your romance, and everything's just thrown in there, and that's why it's such a great show. So I've been able to do that with the music and really have fun with it. And you know, no chord progression, no chord, no melody is off limits. I'm not going, oh well, I can't do that because then I like that. I just do it. And if they don't like it, they tell me. And more often than not, they're like, oh, this is great. Because I'm dealing with really, really intelligent, amazing, essentially filmmakers in Highcastle. You know, David Zucker, the executive producer over there, is one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. Mm. So much so that sometimes when he sends me notes, I have to be like, can you just explain what this word means, please? In the context of what you're saying, I have no idea. It's just like, I mean, the guy's like an author. Like, he's crazy. So his taste, we're very much, you know, I guess we're aloof in our tastes. Mm. It's a very highbrow concept. So, yeah. You know, I can push my classical upbringing and maybe my more sort of snooty, aloof tendencies, because I'm not a very intelligent person when it comes to books and stuff. But, you know, I have been trained musically, so I do have that knowledge. So it's nice to go back to that and not have to be like, oh, can it be more cool? Can it be, you know, basically, yeah, to sum up, falling back on my classical roots and able to, you know, experiment with more highbrow is such a crap word. I'm thinking of a different word, more sort of, and it's not even traditional, more kind of classical contemporary harmonies and structures and melodies, obviously still trying to keep it accessible. So
yeah,
it was such a long-winded answer, I apologize.
Quite all right. In terms of the instrumentation for the new season, have you discovered any new toys to bring into it, or are you still sticking with sort of traditional kind of instruments? Or
not really. I mean, it's the same concept as weird, eerie sounds taken from organic materials and then put traditional orchestral instruments on top of it. But with the time travel aspect, is such a big thing in season three. I wanted to create things that I sort of set up in the pilot, this sort of kind of like the bells and the chimes that we associate with time travel, which I came up with to associate with time travel in season one, is sort of now evolving to this next step. And the thing I wanted to create was, with the time travel, it's very much, you'll see when you watch it, they have to be in a particular state, in which we see briefly in two. They have to be in a particular state to be able to travel. And it's sort of like this weird, eerie dream state that they get, the meditation that they get into. So this could be just me, but you know when you're kind of falling asleep and your next door neighbor has wind chimes, and they're not the annoying, there's annoying wind chimes.
Yeah.
They're kind of like peaceful but almost eerie ones in the winter, especially in England, when it, you know, it gets dark super early and you're sort of lying there and you don't know whether you're asleep or you're awake. So I wanted to try and create that feeling. So I used a lot of sort of small chimes that create this melody, and it's in a suite called the Trudy Suite. So I wanted to create this sort of eerie dreamlike chime induced sort of meditation that's sort of, it's almost a waltz, and it sort of lulls you into something and then pulls you in and pulls you out, which is basically what happens with the time travel in season three. So sort of Hitchcockian aspect that comes in that requires a different treatment of the same instruments, basically. I still wanted to keep everything in the world of Highcastle that I'd already set up. I think if I start introducing more sort of synthy elements or stuff, because I kind of covered everything of organic, like I've used a lot of organic instruments in season one and two. And I didn't want to like reach for something that people would be like, whoa, what's that? Especially as we don't really spend that much time in the alternate reality, in our reality. It's very much, there's a lot that goes on in the alternate reality, where the Nazis would have won. So the more kind of weirder things happen with time travel and being in the other world, which is essentially our world, and there's not that much of that. So yeah, I've rabbited on a lot, but I didn't use many new instruments, but maybe using instruments in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. You've got that, which, as I say, is coming out very soon. Goosebumps 2, you ended up involved with. How did you end up on that then?
Well, What have I done now? 3, 4 movies with Sony now, I think.
Right.
And off the back of Peter Rabbit, which went really, really well. I guess, I don't know. I mean, the head of music there, Spring, thought I was a good fit for it. I don't think they wanted to go back to Danny.
It was Danny Elfman did the first one, which is, I mean, that's no pressure to follow, I'm sure.
Well, I know. Yeah, it's a big ask to follow Danny Elfman, but I don't know why. I guess he didn't want to do the second one, or they didn't want to pay for him to do the second one. I don't know what it was. So I ended up doing it, and any chance for me to write that kind of music, I've always wanted to. I think maybe you asked me in the last interview if there was a score I would like to write, what style would it be, and it is that sort of fantasy magic, you know, Harry Potter-esque type orchestral score, and I've been able to do that with this. And it's been so amazing to, again, go back to like what I started doing, which was studying composition at the Royal Academy of Music and writing these kind of big orchestral scores influenced by, you know, Danny, of course, and John Williams. And then further back to, you know, Strauss and Ravel and Debussy and all those guys who I absolutely adore. So being able to pull all that on this score has been amazing. And then getting to record in LA with all the heavies that have been on all my favorite scores. in Sony, which where most of my favorite scores have been recorded, it's just been amazing. And you know, I'm really proud of this score. It's very traditional. There are adventure elements, there are scary elements, and with this one I really tried to kind of, well, I was pushed by Ari, the director, and the producers to not hold back on the scary stuff.
Right,
they wanted it to be scary. Obviously I think the picture allows it to be, the music to be scarier, because it's not goofy or you know, those negative connotations, but it definitely holds a scarier soundtrack than perhaps the first one did. And essentially, you know, R.L. Stine books, we don't have them in England, do we?
Not really, no.
I mean you'd probably get hold of them if you found out about them, but it wasn't a big thing. But here they're massive. I mean, my wife and everyone from our generation is like, oh, Goosebumps is so great, great, great. But they were apparently, I've never read one, but they apparently were really scary.
Right, yeah.
So I was able to go a bit scarier. I was able to do the traditional orchestral, you know, homage to my favorite composers, Williams and Silvestri and Elfman. And obviously following an Elfman, I could lean a little bit more on the Elfman side of things.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to copy him. You know, I didn't want to like do a faux Elfman score.
That's
not what I wanted to do. I was very clear that we should use his theme from the first one, because I get so annoyed when you watch, not that this is a franchise, but you know, when you watch those movies that or sequels and like, where's the theme from the first one?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, totally. Why would you? And people would get rid of it. I know why they do it, because, you know, they want the cue and they don't want someone else.
Yeah.
But I think as a filmmaker and as someone who's supposed to be doing their job for this movie, to tie it into the first one and have those storylines come back and be remembered musically too. So it doesn't happen all that much, but in the important moments when you are supposed to be reminded of the first movie, lo and behold, the Goosebumps Danny Elfman theme comes back. So I obviously wrote themes of my own for Slappy. I wrote this, a Slappy March, which is sort of, Slappy's the dummy in Goosebumps, the ventriloquist dummy. I don't know if you know the first one, but, so I wrote a march for him, which was super fun. And it basically makes him like this master of puppets summoning Halloween to life. And it gave it more gravitas to do it that way, rather than making it scary and weird and like creepy ventriloquist dummy. It was more, he has that side of him, but it was more rousing as him being the ringleader of Halloween coming to life to do this like big march, this big evil march. So that's cool. Loads of like crazy floral orchestral stuff, a la Strauss, a la John Williams, a la, you know, everything that's floating up there in my crazy mind. But yeah, it's been really, really, really fun to be able to do that. You do a movie like this and you sort of, you go, why am I doing this all the time?
Yeah.
You write all this crazy orchestral music that you've spent years of your life training how to do. And then you go and you record with these amazing musicians and then it all ends and you feel a bit like weird and depressed because it's all finished and you just want to do it again. And you know, everything else is cool, but you know, DuckTales, High Castle, all that stuff's in the box and I don't have the interaction with the musicians. I don't have the, I don't get to hear it live on a stage. It's just me in my room. So I think that's the really special part is, and even when I'm writing Goosebumps, it's like, okay, well, I know that it's going to be played by this guy, or I know it's going to be played by these musicians and they can handle this because it's a little bit more difficult. I wouldn't necessarily do this if I was going over to Budapest, but now because it's the best of the best, I can write this crazy line. It's just been so much fun. So it's no matter how the movie does, I don't know whether people are gonna go see it. I hope they do, but I'm really proud of the score and I'm getting a soundtrack release, so people will get to hear it.
Awesome. That's really good.
Yeah.
And yeah. The last sort of thing we should probably touch on, Peter Rabbit, which you mentioned a couple of times. You did the score for that. How did you get involved with that one and what was that working on that like?
It was awesome. It's one of the few movies that I've been brought on really early. The whole thing behind it was Will Gluck. I think he worked with one composer before on his very first movie and had an awful experience.
Right.
And so from that moment on was of the mind that he hated film music and never needed it again in his life and would rely very heavily on songs. I mean, he hated film music so much that he made a joke about it in Friends with Benefits of like how cheesy film music is and how rubbish it is. But then obviously when you do Peter Rabbit, you need music that tells story. You can't just do it with songs.
Yeah.
Like when I first started on it, I met with Will. Spring thought we'd be a good fit. Again, Sony movie. Spring thought we'd be a good fit. Met with him. We clicked. He sent me the there's a flashback at the beginning of done in Beatrix Potter illustrations,
right?
That he sent me that and goes, okay, I need like a traditional piece of music for this. And this was sort of the demo phase to see if he really wanted to use me. So I did it. He absolutely loved it. And then, you know, we had the whole task of trying to come up with the rest of the score. But going back to my story, he's never used a film composer really before. And so it was a tricky process of kind of reeling him in. Because it started with, okay, I want songs. So I'm going to get Dom to do a more song-based thing. And then I would do that. And he's like, well, it's not really doing it. It's not epic enough. It's not big enough. So he likes to see it with an audience so he can see what's working, what's not. And it was impossible for me to get enough momentum to come up with the sound of the score. So I rang him up and I was like, listen, you just use temp for the next whatever family and friends screening. And he's like, well, we're not having any for a couple of weeks. I was like, great. Leave me alone. I will go away and I will come up with a sound for your score because right now I just haven't had time. I'm just like, on a TV schedule trying to get stuff out. So he said, fine, go away. I'm going to New York. You go write your stuff. Send me stuff when you're ready. I got in my live room. I started with the whole song stuff with the drums and the bass and the guitars and the pianos and the harpsichords and stuff. And that was my basis, which I sent him because still at that point, I was like, he still wants songs. So I'll send him this kind of like film song type score.
Yeah.
He was like, this is amazing. I love this. This sound is great. I think you found the sound of the movie. Then we put it in the movie. He's like, it's not big enough. It's not epic enough. So from that point, he went away to Sydney because most of it was done in Sydney. He started cutting the film. I took on the beginning of the movie, which had always been a song. He just couldn't get any score in there. So I used these song elements as like a basis of the cue, changed the chords around a bit so it was a bit more filmy, and then slapped a big old orchestra on top of it. And he came back from Sydney and he watched it. And he's like, oh, you're working on this one. Oh, I've cut this. So this is all different. I'm like, well, just watch this version of it. And he loved it. And he said, oh, I shouldn't have cut it. You've made this work and da 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 da. And I mean, he still ended up cutting it. But we'd found the sound of Peter Rabbit, which was, you know, garden tools and orchestra and band elements. And it's a really cool mix. Because when we first met, he was like, I want something that when people hear the score, they go, that can only ever be Peter Rabbit. I don't want it tempting any other film. People got to hear it and go, that's Peter Rabbit. And I hope I came up with that sound. But it's a cool little score anyway.
Yeah, that's very cool. That's very cool. It must be interesting working with somebody that seemingly thought he hate composers. So.
Yeah, well, then I went to the premiere. I'm turning American. It's terrible. I went to the premiere in England, in Leicester Square, and I caught him briefly because he was doing all the press and stuff. And he said, next time we're going to put more score in there. I've put too many songs in this one, but you've made me trust score, and now I know what score can do. And I was like, that's great. If I'm the guy that converted
awesome.
You, that's
I cover awesome.
Yeah.
That's so brilliant.
So we're going to be doing Peter Rabbit 2, I think. I personally haven't signed anything, but he texted me saying that he wants me to do it. And I think he's officially on board now. So
right. Awesome.
I think 2 will be happening next year sometime.
Brilliant. So the last two usual questions that we did last time as well. So first one is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
I just finished Forever.
Oh, yeah.
Which is super weird, but very sweet. And I actually ended up really enjoying it. And it's so different to anything I work on, anything I do. Musically so different. And I love those two guys. So I just watched that, which is the only thing I've had time to watch. I think. Have I watched anything else? No, that's it. That's all I've watched. Forever.
See if this has changed from last time. If you had the opportunity to work in any show, past, present or future, what show would it be? Last time you said a sort of 60s World War II film.
Yeah.
Generally as a genre, and Quantum Leap was the TV show.
Oh, yeah, that's a great answer.
Now you need to better it.
Now I need to better it. Okay, what show would I score? Well, as we are both Brits, you know what I'd like to do?
Yeah.
The Sweeney.
Nice.
I'd love to do The Sweeney. That would be super cool. Although, I don't know. I mean, I would obviously, with any of these shows, I'd never be able to beat the original, but... I'd love to have a go at doing a really kind of intellectual, intelligent indie movie. I don't know. Did you ever see Captain Fantastic?
Not that I remember. No.
Something like that, or like We Bought a Zoo, or something.
Right. Yeah.
Something that's got real heart, but is super intelligent and well made, and allows you to go a little bit smaller, with sort of kind of cuter instruments and a little bit more. I don't know. I'd really like to have a go. That.
Awesome. Well, it's been lovely to catch up again. Hopefully we'll catch up again in sort of 12 months or so and see what else you've been working on.
Yeah, hopefully sooner. If I can work more, then we can catch up quick with 6 months or so. But great to chat, Dave, and speak to you soon, I guess.
Yeah, talk to you soon. Cheers.
All right, mate. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
So that was the interview with Dominic Lewis. DuckTales you can catch on Disney XD. It's already been out, but I'm guessing they'll be rerunning it because it's Disney. And Man in the High Castle arrives on Amazon on the 5th of October. Now we've got some highlights for next week on TV. So highlights for next week, the third season of Man in the High Castle, as we've just been talking about, that's on Amazon Prime on the 5th of October. Very much looking forward to this coming back. It's been a great series. I really enjoyed it. We've got Big Mouth, season 2 of that, coming the 5th of October to Netflix. Very good animated adult series, that. Then the big one that we've got starting this week, Doctor Who, season 11, 7th of October at 6:45. We have Jodie Whittaker as a new Doctor, Chris Chibnall taking over as writer. All reports that have come out from people that have seen it so far seem to be very positive, which is good. I've got high hopes that this is going to work. But 7th of October on BBC One at 6:45 for Doctor Who. Still Open All Hours returns on the 7th of October at 8:30. That's David Jensen back in that for the fifth season. Other big show starting, Walking Dead is back for its 9th season, 8th of October.
Yay.
At 9 p.m. Some people looking forward to this, some people approaching it with a certain amount of trepidation. We will be doing our podcast on The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead UK podcast will be back on Wednesdays. You can go and find that at Entertainment Talk. See whether we're going to be watching it joyously or hate watching it for the rest of this season. But we'll find out when it returns. That's 8th of October at 9 p.m. on Fox UK for The Walking Dead. Sticking with zombies, Zed Nation back for its 5th season on Pick TV. That's on the 9th of October at 10 p.m. That's a fun show if you've not seen that. It's
I have not actually.
It's worth watching. It takes a little while to get into the groove of what they're doing with it, but it's like a fun version of The Walking Dead. I mean, it's still got some serious bits in it, but it's just a lot lighter. It's entertaining and different, and I do recommend that series. It's good fun. Snatch Season 2 for the 6 people that have AMC Global. That's coming on October 9th at 9 p.m. to AMC Global. And The Good Doctor is back for its 2nd season on Sky Witness. That's on the 9th of October at 9 p.m. That's a superb medical drama. If you like your medical dramas and don't have much time, that is probably the one I would recommend you go and watch. It's slightly House, about the autistics. Yeah. Well worth going to watch. Really, really good, that show. And that's everything we have this week, unless you want to add anything else.
I'm just looking forward to things coming back. Obviously, Daredevil. That should be interesting.
We are heading into that time when things definitely start coming back. We've got lots of shows coming up. Riverdale's back. The Gifted coming up this month. Resident. Mm-hmm. All the DC shows, Daredevil, Making a Murderer, new shows like Chilling Adventures of Sabrina starting. So yes, a whole bunch of things this month and next month. If you want to find more from Daryl, you can go and find him at,
you can find me on Twitter at Shaftsword, which is shaftsword. You can follow my new stuff on hollywoodnewssource.com, and you can find me recapping The Gifted for Starry Mag.
Go and check those stuff out for more on Daryl. And for us, if you want to find more news, which is coming thick and fast at the moment, geektown.co.uk throughout the week to see the latest news and airdate information. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.